It is Saturday, May 12th, 2007, 10:06 on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, our Week in Geek news segment, O'Reilly Media's Maker Faire, and in the second half, your questions and comments of technology.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we have Dale Daugherty, co-founder of O'Reilly Media, and he'll be speaking about the next week's Maker Faire. During the second half of the show, I'll welcome you to join the conversation. You can ask us anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or contact us right now. Just get in the queue, go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks, Miles Elam, Slacker Geek, and student. Welcome, Miles.
Good morning.
Sean Cleveland. Sean, you're the, a technical marketing manager at NVIDIA? I think that's right.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that.
And Ryder Brooks. Something over there.
And Ryder Brooks, technical account manager at SCO.
Hey, Lyle. How you doing?
Morning, geeks. We're going to talk to Dale Daugherty, founder of O'Reilly Media, actually, in a little while, about the Maker Faire next week. But first, let's start doing some news. And Miles, I'd like to start with you.
Scientists have created artificial blood. This at an English university. They've created a sort of artificial blood that's akin to plastic. It's plastic molecules that have an iron atom at the core. So it's kind of like hemoglobin that carries the oxygen through the body. The idea behind it is that it doesn't need to be kept cold. It can be taken anywhere. So in emergencies, you can give someone a transfusion. So I doubt they're going to be using it in exchange for O negative or something like that. But at the same time, if you don't have another alternative, for example, if someone has a cut that is bleeding profusely, but it's not a life-threatening cut where it's causing major internal problems, it's just causing a loss of blood, you have a way of maintaining.
Why wouldn't you use it for major internal injuries too?
Well, major internal injuries are ones that would require surgery, some type of repair, or like real real repair. It's caused real damage.
But the blood could still be used to
cut your spleen or something like that, then this isn't going to help much.
We're talking about compensating for a major blood loss.
Right.
But does this blood carry oxygen to the parts of the body? I mean, does it work or
yes.
Is it just colored red?
No, it's
is it
like
even
said,
colored red?
Ooh, good question.
That I don't know. I didn't see any pictures, but
does anybody else get creeped out by the idea of
it definitely has ick factor, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it definitely has a, I don't know. At the same time, if I'm bleeding to death, I'd rather have that in me than nothing.
Give me a gallon, please.
I hate the idea of it being a different color than red. You put this green liquid in you. So it's just plastic particles inside it. There's some iron.
We didn't say it's not necessarily a different color.
We don't know. Right.
Hypothesizing that it may be. And wouldn't that be kind of cool?
Just because that'd be even creepier?
Yeah. It's also lighter than blood as well, so you can carry
more of it.
Well, presumably.
They tested this?
You could lose weight.
I don't know, mammals?
That I don't know.
Okay.
But one thing that they were talking about was on the battlefield. It's funny, a lot of advances they talk about it for military purposes. And
right.
I guess that's legitimate that you can carry it around. It doesn't weigh as much. And then you can use it when you have facilities far away. But still, I think it's a cool thing to
fake blood. Thank you very much. Ryder, going to go with you.
Yeah. So in Bermuda, islands of Bermuda have implemented a new or plan on implementing a new radio frequency ID, RFID into their country's car registration database. Hmm. So they're going to have a little sticker up in the corner, basically has an encrypted unique identifier for each vehicle, and they're going to use it for registration, for registration compliance, enforcement. You go basically go through checkpoints. You know, when you get your car registered, they can scan it, and also
this has a bit of an ick factor too. But it's pretty much like a license plate, but it can be auto scanned.
Yeah, but you know, basically the thing is, it makes it easier for them to find out who's not in compliance with the registration.
Right, they can check every car going through a pass.
Basically, yeah.
So, wow, what do you think about this?
I say it's a little ick factor. It's I'm sure it slid through pretty easily since it's such a small country. I think there are only about 74,000-75,000 cars that would be implementing it. Mm-hmm. So it's probably a great
great test base.
Exactly.
Yeah. I wonder if a corporation that's creating this technology said, "Hey, we'll do your country for free because we just want to see if it will work, and then we'll be able to sell it to others."
Yeah.
But it does seem a little Big Brotherish.
You know what? It kind of reminded me of something that I read about. I think 6 months, a year ago, that there was actually a school up near Davis that they were doing experimental RFID tagging of kids. They had to wear these
I think we covered that at one point, yeah.
Yeah, and that really icked me out because it felt like kids were cattle.
Which they're not.
They're not.
That's true. Well, thank you, Ryder. Sean.
I chipped my dog.
You did?
I didn't. Personally.
Oh, that's the name of the product, isn't it? Trademark. I chipped my dog.
I had a chip put in my dog so we could find him.
Did it work?
I don't know.
Or rather, if someone finds him, they can identify him.
He's never lost him.
You're saying Finn has him?
If I lose him, yes, well, we can find him easier.
So Finn's got a little radio FID in his body.
Yeah, so
a
lot of animals do.
Well, how commonplace is it to know to actually scan your pet that they've got a chip? I mean, do all the vets have that? Or
you can get, it costs money, but, you know, if you lose your pet, then...
He's talking about, like, if I find a dog on the street.
Oh, I see. How do I have?
Well, my girlfriend's dogs have... One, they're tagged on the collar, but they're also tattooed with an ID number. So if they take them to a shelter...
They're tattooed with that ID number, they've got tags, and they've got a radio FID inside them.
I don't think my dog has a tattoo.
Get on it, man. You don't love your dog as much as Miles does.
Can you put it in a... like? can I put it in like an image, like a Harley Davidson image?
Guess if you got the...
I'm sure you could. I don't know.
I'm kidding. I don't want to do that to
my dog. The question Ryder asked, which is very valid, is... Once your dog has a radio FID and then it's found by someone, how do you check it? You have to go to a special place?
You need
place?
A special device to look for it. It's really up to the individual who owns the animal to...
Well, the idea is if you find a stray, you're going to be turning it into the pound, right?
And the pound has
the pound.
The pound would have that scanning device.
Okay. There you go, Ryder. That was a good question. All right, your news story, Sean.
I think I need more coffee.
That's good. Do you want some fake blood with that?
I've seen Ryder and Sean just like, yeah, hi.
I'm just not with it this morning.
Do you want some fake blood with that?
You know, I think I OD'd on technology this week.
Okay, that's just not okay.
Okay, how so?
Just worked on so much hardware and played with so much stuff. And oh, my God. Even in my spare time, I played with computers.
Well, what's fun about computers?
Yeah, good question. So there's a new technology that two companies have put together. One is based in the Netherlands and one based in Emeryville, which is kind of not too far away from here, in Santa Cruz anyway. For those listening elsewhere, we are in Santa Cruz, California.
So what's the new technology?
It's designed to thwart DVD theft. It's a little chip that's smaller than the head of a pin that's placed on a DVD, and a thin layer of coating blocks the DVD from reading critical information on the disc. This coating at the register is, once activated, dissipates. And makes the disc playable.
So it's black until you make it.
Yeah, it's unusable until some device at the register, you know, makes it usable.
And when you say the register,
the cash register where you buy it. And the whole idea is there are a lot of retail stores who lose money every year, $400 million worth from
people
theft.
Stealing.
And there are a lot of places who don't carry high priced items because they're afraid of theft. And the idea is. This is a technology that could make...
So it's a lot like those little
theft,
things.
You know, maybe not so.
It's like those little ink tag things that, or the ink packet things that attach
for
to clothes.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. They explode if they're trying forcefully removed.
Well, that's an interesting idea.
And this technology can be applied to electric shavers, inkjet cartridges, flash memory drives, even flat screen TVs.
Wow. How do you put that in your pants to steal it from a store? Flat screen TV.
Well, I think
the only thing that
happens after hours. I think there's probably going to be some advertising marketing put behind this to educate people.
Yeah, because people don't know. They're still going to steal stuff.
They're still going to steal it. Yeah, so you got to educate. But interesting.
You know, I got to say, though, it's pretty frustrating to be walking out of a store after you bought some clothes and the alarm goes off. And you're like, ugh, you turn around and you're like, I just paid for these things. And the clerk's like, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to take the thing off. What about this? You get home and you put it in your player with a whole bunch of friends over and it doesn't play. And they got to go back
point.
To the store.
Kind
of
happens
hey,
a lot, too.
It does. It does happen a lot. I don't know. I don't like it. All right, we're going to do one more news story because I do want to get Dale on. Miles, last news story?
Sure. This has to do with the fact that we've talked about fuel efficiency in the past, and mostly we talked about it in regards to hybrid vehicles, the fact that a few of us have hybrid cars. This one is just general gas-saving tips and also gas-saving myths. Some of you that watch Mythbusters may know some of these, but number one, if you have a pickup truck, do not have the rear tailgate open. Because it's not going to save you any gas. In fact, it makes it worse. You have an air bubble that... it's kind of like when you put leaves in the back of the truck. The leaves go toward the cab, not toward the back.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going on is there's a little bubble there. If you put the back gate down, then you're actually causing more drag from the cab than you would normally.
You can imagine this air bubble that's created in the back from the tailgate being up in a truck actually produces a more streamlined effect of the vehicle.
Right.
Most of the air can actually go over that bubble kind of like it would a smooth race car.
Right. With the gate down, the air goes over the cab and is forced down into the back of the truck, pushing the back of your car down and causing, reducing your mileage.
It's also a drag factor where it's not able to flow over the vehicle and so it's pulling atmosphere with it and that slows things down.
Right.
Okay, what's another one of these?
But with regard to myths, you mm-hmm. have things like the additives that you add to your tank before you put the gas in. It's supposed to give you a few extra miles or a few extra
horsepower. Yeah, I've seen those things.
Yeah, it's completely bogus. Because, and a really good example of this would be if there was a substance that you could put into your tank to add to gas and make it better, why wouldn't the gas companies be all over that to say like, hey, we have a gas that'll make you last a little bit longer than mm-hmm. this other ones. It's psychological. People mm-hmm. want to put something in there and make a quick fix. Now, windows, air conditioning. Whether you have your windows down or air conditioning turned on, air conditioning at highway speeds is, instead of windows down, is slightly more efficient, but both of them are 1% to 2% drop in
efficiency
overall
of the vehicle.
You know, gas tank.
All right.
So no big deal. And don't wait until Wednesday
buy
your
really?
Gas. Yeah.
That's great.
When you're traveling at high speeds, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it causes some drag, but if you got to choose between one or the other, one, it's worth it just to be comfortable rather than trying to hotbox in your car, have a sauna while you're trying to drive. But also having the air conditioner on and having the windows up is more efficient than having
the windows down.
Yeah.
Wow,
because of drag.
Great.
All right, I'm going to move on, if that's okay, Miles.
Well,
one
really
more you want to close? All right, go ahead.
Real quick ones. One, don't wait until Wednesday to get your gas just because there's a lot of demand on the weekends and the like. And also, don't worry about restarting your engines. People worry about, I'm going to let my engine idle for 2 minutes because if I turn it off and turn it back on, it's going to use a lot more gas in the starter process. That was the case when everything was just a simple carburetor. But now with modern fuel injection technology, you don't actually save gas by turning off your engine. So if you're going to
for
be
what
sitting,
duration?
So if you're sitting in a drive-in just like idle for 30 seconds to a minute, it's actually worth turning off your car.
Unless, of course, your starter doesn't work real well.
Unless your starter doesn't work very
okay.
well.
Okay. Well, thank you, Miles, for those. I didn't know about the engine start. I thought it was more like a minute of time. So really just turn it off anytime you are stopped. What about stopping at an intersection?
It doesn't make sense like at an intersection. It doesn't for that
so
short
like
duration.
About a minute.
Yeah, about a minute. If you think you're going to be there for a minute or two, turn the car off.
Unless you got a Prius, in which case it turns off for it by itself automatically. I hate you both.
And keep those tires
inflated. Or hybrid.
What did I say? Oh, I said a Prius. I'm sorry.
And
or
keep
any
those,
hybrid.
Yeah, keep those tires inflated. Keep the stuff out of the trunk.
Stuff out of the trunk. Oh. Thank you, Miles. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks. Drew's not here. Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and Ryder Brooks. And we're now going to invite Dale Daugherty. He's the editor and publisher of Make Magazine by O'Reilly Media. And he joins us via phone to talk with us about next week's Maker Faire at San Mateo Fairgrounds. Dale, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you for having me, Lyle.
I want to talk about Make Magazine and Craft, which I finally first saw Craft recently. What two wonderful magazines. We've actually, I think, done three episodes on Geek Speak about Make Magazine.
Really?
Yes.
Great.
Yeah, quite fun. A couple times with Phil. I can't remember his name now.
Phil Terone.
In any case, wonderful magazine. And can you just give us a synopsis of what you find in Make Magazine?
Sure. Make Magazine is about technology projects. And we really
try to apply what we call a DIY mindset to technology. You know, we have it, DIY magazines in gardening and cooking and woodworking, and we just really wanted to say, what are the kinds of projects you can do to have fun with technology, you know, just things that you would do yourself, not because someone's asking you to do them.
Can you give us a couple examples of your favorite projects?
Well, my favorite one really is still probably the very first issue. We did kite aerial photography, and it was about building a rig and placing inside the rig a disposable camera, and then attaching that to a kite and getting it up in the air and taking pictures of the ground, say, from 200 feet. You know, it's like you're having a group of people over for a party and you want a really kind of unusual shot of them. It's a lot of fun. And, of course, there's, you know, a whole community of people that build kite aerial photography rigs, and they can get as simple as the one we have, or really more complex ones with servo motors, you know, rotating the camera up and down, or adding a video camera that transmits the, you know, the image to the to the ground, so you can see what you're shooting before you shoot it.
I love the tact, for example, on that project. The one that you have is basically use some silly putty and a rubber band and some sticks, and that's your timing mechanism.
Absolutely. So, you know, with a disposable camera, the issue is how do you get it to click, and we set up a mechanism. The author is Chris Benton from UC Berkeley. He's a professor of architecture, and he kind of was trying to come up with a simple rig that he could, you know, get kids to build. And the idea was, well, you know, I can't really put a fancy electronics on this, so I'm just going to, he called it the silly putty viscous timer, and he basically jammed silly putty in a hole and twist the rod around it and attach a rubber band, and it just sort of releases in about 45 seconds to a minute, and that's like enough time for you to get the kite up in the air.
As long as you can run well and there's a good wind.
Exactly, take a picture, and you know, it's a one-shot-at-a-time approach, but it works pretty well for a beginner.
So Make Magazine's been out for about a year and a half, 2 years?
No, about we're in our third year.
Wow, really? It's been that long.
So we have two full, we're quarterly, so we have, we're on our 10th issue is coming out right now.
And so, Craft Magazine, not exactly the same type of stuff in Craft. Explain what Craft Magazine is.
Well, Craft, you know, we started getting a lot of, there's sort of two things happening. One, we started getting some projects, and we said, well, these are pretty interesting, and we'd like to include them in Make, but they almost started to be a little bit different. I like to think of Make as a little bit more focused on the functional, and the Craft tends to focus on the aesthetic, on the finished good. And there's a tradition of crafts, just as there's a tradition of sort of DIY electronics that we're kind of based on here. And we saw a new group of people coming after Craft, and just with new enthusiasm, new ideas. It's not sort of the boring stuff that you see sometimes in kind of the more, you know, the older craft magazines and the
Give us an example of something exciting in the craft magazines.
Well, I mean, our cover on the initial one was, you know, making robot dolls, you know, out of, you know, they're knit. But, you know, we apply felting.
Wait, I'm assuming that the robot dolls were not actually building the robot, but taking a kid's toy that's plastic and everything.
These are just knit, you know, they're just meant to look like robots.
Oh, okay.
But it's just the design is fresh. There's just a range of things there. I mean, some of it's based on, you know, like I said, traditional things like sewing and knitting, crocheting. But we do this hyper tufa planter, which is something you make out of concrete and kind of build your own form for it, and a kind of a Zen garden fountain and things of that nature.
Okay, so I'm glad to hear that there seems to be a little bit of cross in between. I mean, it definitely feels to me like I'm way into the Make magazine, but when I saw the Craft magazine, though, I wouldn't have maybe picked it up. When I started looking, I was like, oh, this looks like great projects to do. And it didn't have that kind of stuffy quality that a lot of the home improvement kind of magazines.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're trying to kind of separate out. I mean, we don't want to get too practical here. You know, it's like someone else.
Well, Make's not exactly practical either, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it's how to do your deck or something. But it's just we look kind of for things that are inspiring and fun and creative, and that's really what ties them together. But, you know, we're also, you know, craft tends to be more of a female audience than a male audience, and technology tends to be more of a male audience than a female audience. But our hope in essentially something like a Maker Faire is actually to remix a lot of this together so that people start where they're comfortable, but they actually, you know, grow into new areas. And we have, in our first issue, we had this LED tank top, you know, where you're sewing, into a shirt, you
right.
know, and have a little control pack on your hip that you can program it. And, you know, we also have, some thumb dolls in the current issue that, you know, you're using conductive thread. So there's really new materials and techniques out there that involve, electronics and I think most magazines, certainly, and most books in this area would be afraid to touch.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so next week in San Mateo, you're taking over the fairgrounds. What's it going to be like?
Well, it's going to be, first of all, just a great experience. We have, at Maker Faire is a bit, I think everybody's a little bit familiar with a county fair, an art fair, and a science fair, and we kind of soup those up a bit and make it fun. The basic idea of Maker Faire for me was, I think there's a lot of people doing really cool stuff that if we brought them together, even though you might be doing crocheting or robots or rockets or bicycle hacking, that you'd actually enjoy talking to each other because you're doing things for your own enthusiasm and interest. And so that's really what happened last year. We had about 20,000 people last year, had about 200, 225 makers. This year, I'm expecting almost double that crowd and over 400 makers. And we've got some great stuff.
You have 400 people bringing their weird creations.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, this is everything from, you know, there's stuff that people build for Burning Man that they're bringing.
Mm-hmm.
We have, if you've never been to events like that, which I haven't, it's a great opportunity to see some of the creative work that not just individuals do, but really groups of people work on these things. One is a life-size mousetrap game. And
that sounds painful.
Remember the mousetrap game as a kid that, you know, was sort of Rube Goldberg contraption to capture the mouse. Well, this is one built with, you know, a real safe and a real bathtub and a ball. The ball that runs through it is a bowling ball. So it's 25,000 pounds of equipment that gets set up, and they'll be, you know, building that at the fair and setting it off, you know, on the hour.
That's worth going to.
That's
right
worth
there.
Going to, definitely. I love those things. Talking about triggered event stuff, if you're not familiar with Rube Goldberg, it's some event affects the next event and so on. It's a chain reaction. And so you're going to catch a human?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what they're catching. I haven't seen it before, so I'll.
Well, okay.
We'll
so what's?
See, but I'm sure they'll do something.
What's a Swaparama?
Well, Swaparama is a clothing event. They basically take bags of old clothing. You can bring old clothes, and they have designers and others on hand there to help you remix that clothing. You know, you just go into a pile and say, I like this and I like that, and they'll come up with a new design and make something very interesting for you. You know, get you working on it too. And it was a fascinating and fun event last year that organized by Wendy Tremaine, and she is kind of trying to get people. She's kind of an anti-consumerist spokesperson, and really wants to get people thinking into making their own fashion and remixing old styles and creating new things.
And so the idea with that is that you bring some old clothes and then you've got a big pile and you pick out some stuff and kind of redesign something and grab a sewing machine and get to working on
but
it.
But what's kind of cool is you actually have some really expert people there to help you. You know, it's not like just sit down at a table and start sewing. You know, people say, here's some ideas. And, you know, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Do you like this? Do you like this color? That would go well with it. You know, so there's some support and it's a fun, you know, they got a lot of music going on. There's a lot of energy in the room. So it's a fun thing, almost, on its own.
We're talking with Dale Doherty. He is He's the editor and publisher of Make Magazine by O'Reilly Media, and he's joining us via phone to talk about next week's Maker Faire at San Mateo Fairgrounds. You can learn a whole bunch more information at geekspeak.org. We're going to start taking your calls in just a moment. You can ask us anything you'd like, but I hope that you ask some questions of Dale about his magazines, O'Reilly Publishing, or the Maker Faire next week. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. Do call in if you have any questions for the geeks today. The phone numbers are 476-2800, again, 476-2800, or call 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can visit us at geekspeak.org. Click on Contact Us to ask us questions. Stay tuned with KUSP for Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the Arum, we have Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, Ryder Brooks, and we're on the phone with Dale Doherty. He is the editor and publisher of Make Magazine. We'll take any questions or comments of technology you have today for us. And, of course, if you want to ask about O'Reilly's Make Magazine, please do. Or Craft or Maker Faire next week. 476-2800. 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. So, Dale, what are you excited most about next week?
Well, you know, it's actually the people. The makers themselves, I just enjoy discovering and meeting new people and finding out what they do. It's every one of them is fun to talk to and you know, get to ask questions about how they got started and, you know, what they're working on and what's next. So we're bringing the makers in and getting them to, you know, they're coming from, people coming from Vienna and, you know, England and New York and all over, but, you know, it's largely concentrated in the Bay Area. And I'm just really excited. The Bay Area is such a creative place for technology and art, and we bring some really interesting things together.
How many robots are we talking about?
Oh, we've got an entire hall. Last year, our main hall is this year devoted to robotics, and so we have a combat arena. They're going to be doing, fighting robots of various sizes, and
that's not illegal.
Pardon me?
That's not illegal?
I don't know if it violates the robotic code or three laws, but it's not illegal in this state.
Isaac Asimov's law?
Yeah.
Robot. That's great.
But we have workshops for building little blinky bots, robots to look like insects, and we have hands-on activities in that area. We have soccer robots, and We have all kinds of things happening there.
Is this event a kid-friendly, family-friendly kind of
thing? Absolutely. I mean, that's what's really great about it. It's a terrific event for the family, and we have a mini makers area this year for kind of kids under 10 to get involved in projects and do things. We have a play day area, which is actually not for kids only. It's one of the more popular areas. We've worked with a computer recycling center in Berkeley called ACCRC, and they're bringing a lot of discarded electronics, and it's really fun to take that stuff apart and remix it with other things and come up with your own little, you know, funky robot.
Okay, so I'm at makerfaire.com.
Yes.
Looking at pictures of things that are going to be shown there.
Right.
This year. Kind of cool. And there is a robotic walking table. I'm wondering, can they actually make it walk with a drink on it? Because that would be cool.
Well, you know, we need to see. This is what happens at Maker Faire. We do have cocktail robots coming that make cocktails. Maybe we could get them with the table and they could work things out.
That's awesome. They could actually communicate through Bluetooth.
Yeah. That's right. Well, actually, here's the one that's coming. It's Eric Paulos put this together, a project called Hullabaloo. And we're mounting it on a couple poles at the fair. And you walk by, and it picks up that you've got a cell phone with a Bluetooth signal on it, and it just registers your ID and assigns you a bird call. And so there's a speaker there, and when you walk by it, it'll play your bird call. And when other people walk by, you know, they have their own unique bird call. And so you kind of form a flock of birds unique to who's ever near that pole.
Wow. You know what it should do is assign the same bird call to some other random person.
And to find them.
And then you got
to
find your other your mate.
This sounds like
chirp,
a,
chirp, huh?
It sounds like a geek extravaganza.
It is. It is. But, you know, the fun thing about it is it's not, well, it goes beyond the sort of the traditional, you know, notions of geek in some ways that I am just, last year I was so surprised at how engaged everyone was, the audience and the makers themselves. They were, many of them, great showmen. They get up in front of people and talk about what they do, and their eyes light up, and they're just, you know, they're going like you would never see them normally, I think.
I love the whole philosophy behind Make. I don't know if you have like a mission statement, but it really does seem to take us out of this consumer-only world and to go, you know, you have creativity, and technology can be something you're creative with.
Yeah.
And that idea, that's something I do in my professional life, too. I work for a program that does digital arts new media, and it's a lot about trying to empower people to be creative with technology.
Absolutely. I think creativity is really the theme behind it all, that, you know, our goal is to bring, you know, scientists and engineers and artists and craftspeople together and really look at how creative they are. That's the spark that I'm looking for, not necessarily the technical skill behind it. And what I think we end up exploring is really interesting alternatives, both the ways of thinking and ways of doing and in between.
Today on Geek Speak, we are taking any calls and questions of technology. If you'd like to ask us about your broken computer or some problems with installing software or anything you'd like, you're welcome to call up right now. The phone lines are empty, and we'll answer any questions you have about technology. Phone numbers are 476-2800, again, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-KUSP. Of course, that's in California. Sean, you had a question for Dale?
Yeah, so you've got all these craftsmen and scientists and tinkers, you know, people who are really interested in this stuff coming together. But what about manufacturers and commercial people who are looking for inventions and ideas, who actually know how to bring this stuff to the market? I mean, are you getting those kind of people come to the fair?
You know, I have kind of stayed away a bit from the commercialization. I mean, we do have, you know, commercial exhibitors and stuff, but they're usually, they're not looking for inventions, and I actually weed out a few of the makers that real intent is coming is to kind of tout a new invention.
Or to sell something.
Yeah, it's more it's a little bit different mindset. It's almost like proprietary software versus open source.
Yeah.
It's the inventors kind of like are very protective of their ideas and feel like people are, and they might be right. You know, people are going to rip them off, and so they, you know, they just want you to buy it. They don't want you to kind of ask questions about it. And the Maker Faire is really about kind of the dialogue of oh, where'd you get that part? I've been looking for those kind of things, you know.
But you do have big corporations there, and Microsoft's going to.
Yeah, Microsoft's there, Google, Yahoo, Sun, Adobe. Partly what's happening, I think that, you know, more, again, this is, you know, if you take invention up one level, you start talking about design and creativity again, which is, you know, really interesting to the in the make and craft space. Is, you know, how do we think about new ideas for projects and new things that people need? And I think the makers are just exploring on their own ideas for things that they need. And you could look at them and say, oh, that, you know, that could actually work. This would be, you know, even the Bluetooth phone example. You could even start thinking about, well, that'd be kind of interesting, given, you know, different, you know, a conference or something else. I could use that over there. I think they're there to explore. Google, for instance, is, you know, does a SketchUp tool that a lot of the makers use to model.
SketchUp's
their,
a great product. By
yeah,
Google.
Model their device.
Now, I've got two kids. I've got a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. Mm-hmm. And Jim from Big Sur emailed in with an off-air question of, you know, what age range is. So should I bring my 2-year-old or not?
Well, I think it's a little bit young for the two-year-old. I mean, the two-year-old's a little bit young.
But the five-year-old's going to love it.
We certainly had plenty of people there. I think the five-year-old will get a kick out of it.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to ask you, because we're kind of talking in the vein of, like, who the people are that create things and make things and what that kind of idea is, and that corporations are kind of seeing that as a useful idea. And I kind of see parallels here with the Web 2.0 movement. Now, you actually coined the term Web 2.0, correct?
I did, unfortunately.
So, yeah, it's kind of those things that kind of comes back and haunts you. What was the idea behind your terminology for it?
Sure. Well, I really thought it, you know, the time and place was maybe 4 years ago or so. So this is really at the, we were in the kind of the trough or the bust around the web, and people, you know, were asking us, O'Reilly and other places, you know, what's next? What's going to be the next technology to get people excited about it? And I, you know, just realized it was going to be the web again. You know, it wasn't like a whole new technology. It was just the web is going to, you know, we're going to look at a lot of the ideas that we had during what we might call Web 1.0 and say, I could do those now, and I probably could do it with, you know, I don't need $10 million to, you know, to fund a startup, but I need, you know, 15,000 and two people to do it.
Right.
So it's really, I saw that there was sort of new approaches and new energy and ideas that kind of was under the radar of a lot of people out there. And I thought, well, you know, quietly, you know, the web is, you know, is going to be this platform for the next generation of applications. And when the web first emerged, it really wasn't a platform in the sense that, you know, Microsoft is a platform or
right.
you know, Mac OS X is a platform.
But now it's starting to become like an operating system almost.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that the difference is that, you know, in Web 1.0, you kind of had to build from the bottom up.
Right.
And, you know, and there were many systems that got developed as projects there. But when you came at Web 2.0, you could, as a development team, you could start building on the work of other people. So it was a lot easier.
Kind of like grabbing parts of old computers and building a robot.
Absolutely.
You don't have to build the motors yourself.
Absolutely.
All right. We're going to take a call from Scotts Valley. Kira, welcome to Geek Speak. What's your question today, Kira?
Hi. Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, great. I have a question regarding how to uninstall and reinstall Zone Alarm. I'll tell you what happened. I installed an internal wireless adapter. I think it had a Zone Alarm program on it. Anyway, it didn't work. I took it out and then purchased another adapter, wireless adapter, and installed it to the USB port. I mean, the external adapter, wireless adapter.
Okay.
After I did that, I upgraded Zone Alarm.
Mm-hmm.
When I upgraded Zone Alarm, and it said, well, do you want to, you know, restart the computer, you know, restart your computer?
Sure.
I said, yes, of course. And when I did, it just started going in circle. It would never really restart up all together.
So now your computer won't restart?
I finally went into safe mode.
Okay.
And, you know, was able, you know, to get the computer to go back to its previous condition before I upgraded.
Okay, so you know about application, in Windows XP, it's application removal. What's that app called?
Add remove applications. It's in the control panel.
You know about that?
I do, but I've done all of that.
You can do that in safe mode, too. But if you want to stop something from running, go to start, and on the run line, type msconfig. And that's where you can specify, there's a tab that shows startup. And that specifies what applications start up with Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And look for Zone Alarm there and remove the check mark next to it.
Mm-hmm.
So go to start, run, type msconfig,
mm-hmm.
and then go to startup tab.
Mm-hmm.
And that pops up in the dialog, the startup tab. And then go there, and that's where you can remove the applications. You're safe to remove anything there.
Yeah,
you can remove everything there. And that'll make Windows boot faster. And, well, when you actually... may not make it boot faster, but when you get into Windows, it'll certainly make it usable.
and then when you after you restart your machine after doing that, then it won't start up, and then you can do add remove programs, and you'll probably have success removal.
You know, first, before you do add remove programs, you should go to start programs and find the application mm-hmm. in your list of programs and see if it has its own uninstall link.
Yeah, I've done all of that, and then some of the files would not remove. I can't remove some of them.
And that's why we're suggesting to stop it
so
it won't start up.
The files, the fact that they're there as part, you know, installed,
uh-huh.
it's not that big a deal. You just want to make sure it's not running in the background.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, and good luck with that.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. We're going to now go to Soquel and invite Tom on to ask us a question. Tom, what's your question today?
Hello.
Hello, Tom. What's your question?
Hi there. My girlfriend has a young son. He's interested in computer graphics, and I was wondering if you fellas might know a place where he could do like an internship or some sort of a practicum with that sort of a thing.
Does he have any... I personally don't. Anybody else here know about internships for graphics? No. We're blanking on it. The idea being to get him a...
What about Dale?
Well, Dale, you got internships at O'Reilly Media?
Well, probably not exactly what he's looking for, because we do have interns, and they build things for the magazine. You know, they take the... They're kind of our trial test lab, if you will. So we take an author's project, and we build them...
But graphics.
Do you remember when I look at gaming companies? I mean, if you really want to learn graphics, that's a good place to start.
Yeah. I mean, there's programming graphics, and then there's like Photoshop graphics. And
right. And what's he?
Yeah.
I guess, you know, he's into these movies, you know, Finding Nemo and some of this other stuff. And
animation.
You betcha.
I see.
I guess these laboratories are quite secretive, and of course, understandably so. But I
have one suggestion for
you.
There's a company called the Digital Media Factory. They're in the old Wrigley's building on the west side of Santa Cruz.
Oh, yeah.
And they have open houses sometimes where a lot of media folk come in and gather. And this is pretty focused to film, but I understand they do graphics work in film. So you could definitely give it a shot and go to one of those open houses. Yeah. They're normally on Friday night.
That's a good idea.
Once a month.
You know, and another idea is there's lots... You know, I've encouraged people just take their own initiative and try to, you know... learn the tools and try to make something. And a lot of people end up with jobs and internships because they've posted something really cool on the internet.
For sure. These internships are, you know, they're very sought after.
Right.
It's very competitive to get these things.
Right. They're looking for people who have already demonstrated some proficiency.
I see.
But here's an idea. Have your son or your stepson, girlfriend's son, go to processing.org. Processing.org is an easy way to start manipulating graphics. There's a lot of examples. It's a programming language. It's actually built on Java. And in the sense that you can do a lot of artistic work with there. And when you're there taking a look at it, go on the right-hand side. There's a whole bunch of people that have had samples that have been put up. And you can play with their samples. You can see how their code is done. And you can start working on that. That'll get an idea of programming, whether this kid's going to want to program.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a great opener.
Something else you might want to look into are summer camps. There are a number of them, and they look good on a resume, and it allows them to immerse themselves with people who want to do the same thing. You know, it's going to cost you money, but
that's
something
right.
worth looking into.
You know, if a year ago or 2 years ago, we did have a summer camp for ID Tech Camps.
ID Tech Camps.
It was on Geek Speak.
Yeah.
If you go to geekspeak.org, well, go to Google and search up ID Tech Camps.
ID Tech Camps.
Thank
but
you
there
so
are a number
for
of those, cool. especially for graphics.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Tom, thank you very much for the call.
I appreciate it.
Let's go ahead and take one more. Well, we'll take a few more cars, but yeah.
That actually reminds me, talking about internships, for a question for our guests, how old or how young can people be to be interested in Make, or what is the Maker Faire actually tailoring to in terms of age groups?
Well, as I said, we have, this year I tried to put some, you know, create an area particular for kids under 10. You know, it's sort of 5 to 10 is probably a good range. You know, there were kids and people bring, you know, because they come as families to fairgrounds. There were different ranges of kids. But more interesting, the magazine, last year, or when I just sort of launched the magazine, I really thought we were aiming for males from 25 to 55 kind of age. And we've gotten a really strong reaction from kids. I mean, and two things. Sometimes the parents say, you know, I can't find the magazine once it comes to the house because my teenager's taking it and it's off in his room. And also, you know, some people say, well, should you do a Make for kids? Because it seems to be really popular with kids. I go, well, it's fine the way it is. They don't want us to put a kids label on it, and then it won't be cool anymore.
Right. Let's go ahead and take a call from Santa Barbara. Jared, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello, Jared. What's your question today?
Hi. I had a question for Mark.
Dale.
Dale, sorry. I was wondering, any of the makers from last year from the festival, if they've combined, if any of them have combined, like two or three makers combined their talents to do some kind of hybrid project, I mean, something like along the lines of this cocktail mixer with the walking table example.
Yeah, I probably won't know until I see it. You know, I'm kind of, you know, I'll have to see that. I hope there is. I mean, I think this year we're actually highlighting a lot of different groups. You know, we have the Interactive Technical Program from NYU bringing about six or seven grad students out with their work. And, you know, we have the Shipyard, the SRL folks. So there's a lot of people that actually collaborate. But I heard, you know, like from last year, someone that, you know, was a crafter there, they went over and looked into the machine shop we had set up there and saw a CNC milling machine, and they said, "Oh, you know, I could learn to work with wood and build these templates for you know the craft that she was working on." So I do hope it happens. We'll have to see specifically, you know, at this year's event.
Yeah. Well, I think I'll come up from Santa Barbara next week and take a look. It sounds really fascinating.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it.
So, Lyle, you're at the Danham program up at UCSC, mm-hmm. Digital Arts and New Media. And you work with students who do this sort of thing, but more focused towards art.
Yeah.
Are they going to make? Have they talked about
this?
You
know, I haven't talked to the students about who's going or not, but I'm going. And I thought about booking it as time for work because it's definitely in the same field. Now, I'll have to invite a whole bunch of a group to come up. It's definitely a growing field, this idea of in doing creative things with technology. I mean, that's one of the things that I run into, and I constantly, even the people that are in my program, and of course friends and anybody that calls on the show to some degree, there's this idea that technology is scary and people have an inherent, you know, just abhorrence to it. It's alien. And once you get past that idea and you can start looking at technology like people look at, you know, basic technology like pencils, where it's not scary at all. I know how to use it perfectly and it's not a problem. And then you start seeing really amazing creativity come out of it. That only happens when you get past that stage of frustration and concern. And you know, we all know that our kids do it really well.
Yeah.
You know, kids take remote controls. Pretty soon they're programming the TVs and nobody else knows how to do it in the house because they don't have that fear that people have. So I see it as a fear thing in any case. And I really am glad to see like a fair, you know, to say, hey, we're celebrating this idea that technology is friendly and fun.
Yeah. And you know, what kids also do very well is they copy each other. You know, if they see something cool, they figure it out and they try to do it themselves. And I think in many ways, almost the previous caller's question is, Maker Faire is a really great place to see what other people are doing, and you know you can talk to them about it, you can see it up close, and you know it really helps you kind of get in your own mindset how to do some of these things.
Definitely. Well, let's go ahead and take another call. We'll go ahead and go with Gene in Pacific Grove. Welcome to Geek Speak, Gene.
Good morning. Quick question. Sorry, it's not on topic. But my monopoly down here, CompuServe, has offered me 1 year free digital television to get a box, I guess, and make my cable connection digital.
Mm-hmm.
One, is that going to be better something or other? I don't know what, and should I do it?
When it comes down to it, Congress has mandated that we're moving to HD. So sooner or later, your analog TV, if you're getting over-the-air signals, is going to stop working.
But if he's got cable and they're giving him a year of upgraded cable.
Yeah, Sean, upgraded to digital. I guess my TV can take it. It's a 2-year-old.
Does that mean all of your, if all of the stations are digital, it's going to look really good.
Uh-huh.
But if you're going to be getting any older analog-based stations,
right.
Those aren't going to look so good on a new digital TV.
Wow.
But like Miles said, those are all going away. Everyone's going to digital. You know, when I got my big screen, I had Comcast come for various reasons. The guy looked at my screen and explained it all to me. And he said, you know, we're getting so many complaints from people about just how bad TV looks, regular analog TV looks on their new digital screens, that Comcast is really pushing to move everyone to digital quickly.
Right. Well, if they're moving, let's say you've got a non-digital TV.
That's what I'm saying. It's a 2-year-old TV. I don't know if it's digital or not.
And you want to know whether you should migrate your cable box to a digital receiver.
Bingo.
I think it's a no-brainer. I think you should definitely do it.
Yeah.
I don't have cable.
Depends
though,
on the cost, you know, if you can afford it, that sort of thing. But
is
yeah,
it
it's going to be a better signal. You're going to see a difference even on analog TV.
Why is this
probably
costing more money? I mean,
is it costing more money?
They're doing it. They're giving it to me for free. They're giving me the digital signal free for a year. I mean, I'm still paying for my package.
Okay.
But I'm saying, my question is, I have a 2-year-old Sony TV. Can it switch to digital just like that?
So you don't have a high-definition television? You would need
a high-definition TV.
Well, I mean, there's two things. You're talking about a digital TV or you're talking about a digital cable box. A digital cable box is the way that it's signaling in and streaming the data into the cable box itself, but not to your TV, which
you'll
is
be
different.
Able to, you'll be able to use an old TV with the new cable box.
Okay.
You'll be able to do that, but you won't get much improvement in signal.
You'll need an HDTV to really see the high-definition digital signal.
They just want me getting going that way.
The prime thing that you might see is that you're going to have a new user interface when you navigate with your cable provider.
Yeah, that's one of the things they mentioned.
Yeah, that may be good or maybe bad. Personally, I've had bad experiences when that was initially rolled out where there was lag time, changing channels.
I miss my TiVo. The Comcast PVR isn't as good. But that said, I'm not giving up my Comcast PVR because I enjoy HDTV far too much.
So you wouldn't switch to the Comcast, the new digital. Did you have an older
When I was doing analog, I had a television set and TiVo. Mm-hmm. I love the TiVo interface. But then I moved to Comcast and I got their PVR because I wanted HD. My old TiVo didn't support
PVR
it.
PVR stands personal video recorder.
It's like the same as a TiVo, but it's a Comcast version. Not as good, but I love HD signals.
I
watch those shows.
Gene, I hope that we helped in some way and didn't just confuse you about this.
Let me ask one more question. You love HD signals, but you have an HD TV in order to get HD signals.
Exactly.
Okay, gotcha. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Gene. Well, let's talk a little bit more about Maker Faire. Dale, when I first heard that you guys were doing Maker Faire, I kind of thought, well, how can they pull together a whole fairgrounds? Is this because Make Magazine and Craft have been so successful?
Well, or we just take the risk. Anyway, I don't. You know, we wanted to do some events, and you know, I just came up with the idea, and I like the idea of a fairgrounds. It's both indoors and outdoors, and it's informal. I didn't want. You know, we've all been to kind of technology trade shows inside of large convention centers, and then they're pretty deadly. So we wanted to kind of have a, you know, sort of a different. You know, different space, and fairgrounds aren't used as heavily as they once were. County fairs are somewhat in decline, and you know, they're kind of actually excited to have us there.
Maker Faire is next week in San Mateo Fairgrounds. MakerFaire.com if you want to learn more information. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org. The Geeks this morning were Miles Elam, Ryder Brooks, and Sean Cleveland. Answering the phone today was Rick Philman. Thank you all for participating in Geekspeak.
Glad to be here.
Thank you, Lyle.
Yep. Dale Doherty is the editor and publisher of Make Magazine and Craft Magazine by O'Reilly Media. He's also co-founder of O'Reilly Media. He's joined us to talk about next week's Maker Faire at the San Mateo Fairgrounds. Will you give me one more piece that's going to be there that you're excited about seeing?
Well, SRL, Survival Research Labs, is kind of, for 25 years, have been legendary in San Francisco for building these kind of really... unusually destructive and interesting machines, a new kind of sort of dark version of robots. And they're going to be bringing some of their machines to Maker Faire, and Mark Pauline will be there. You can meet him and talk to him about what
these are. These industrial-sized robots that
Absolutely.
Drive around and shoot fire and flame.
Yeah,
and have
they're meant to destroy each other in you know, kind of some apocalyptic
Dale race. Doherty, thank you so much for being on Geekspeak today.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I'll see you next week at the fair.
All right.
And thank you for listening to Geekspeak. To those that called in, thanks for making Geekspeak what it is. Without you, it'd just be us geeking out. And who wants to listen to that? Geekspeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, and it's used by permission. For KOSB and Geekspeak, I'm Lyle Troxell.